Chapter 13 Centerpoint Station. Jason sliced through the midsection of his last opponent's blaster rifle and followed through with a spinning kick that catapulted the man over the walkway rail. With a wail of fright, the man dropped 2 stories distance to the metal floor, an impact that Jason calculated would injure but probably not kill him. Jason turned to look back the few meters he'd just come. 8 of the Corsac agents lay on the walkway unconscious, some bleeding, 2 of them missing their right forearms. 2 sonic projectors installed on the lower bodies of R5 astromechs sat smoking and motionless. The other 4 Corsac agents and Thrak and Sal Solo had retreated through a heavy metal door. About 4 meters high, it looked like original Centerpoint Station equipment, though the security pad next to it was of more recent manufacture. Jason could sense danger, and malice, on the other side of that door. He reached for the open button, not expecting it to work. Doubtless, Thraken had locked it down. But a vision of the future, of one possible future, crossed Jason's thoughts, and he jerked his hand back. In his mind's eye, he saw himself depressing the button, an electronic signal passing along the security device's pathways to an odd device on the other side of the door, an explosion powerful enough to blow the door and a large section of wall around it to nothingness. Jason trotted down the walkway, putting a good distance between him and the door, then turned back to focus on the security pad. Barely visible at this distance was the tiny green glow of the open button. He put his hands over his ears and exerted himself against that button, the merest push with the force. With a brilliant flash and a punishing wave of sound, the door blew in, bending and crumpling as it flew through the space Jason would have occupied. Smoke and shrapnel that had once been surrounding wall sections accompanied it. The walkway beneath Jason's feet rocked, then quickly steadied itself. He ran back the way he'd come, putting on a force-based burst of running speed, and leapt through the new opening in the wall. Corridor. Broad. Dark. Left. Away from the areas of the station he wanted to reach. Open. Right. In the distance, a line of Corsac agents, 20 or more in a well-dressed pair of lines, the front line kneeling, curved transparasteel crowd control shields at the ready, while the rear line stood with blasters aimed. Behind the 2 lines stood Thraken Sal Solo. Closer, 10 meters away, but floating toward him, scarred and still smoking from where explosion debris had hit them, were 2 probots. No, not quite. These droids looked a lot like Rebellion-era probots. Misshapen and bulbous, slightly less than 2 meters tall, they floated on repulsor lifts well above the floor, 4 mechanical arms dangling beneath, just like the old stealth droids. But these were bronze in color rather than black, and their arms seemed bulkier, sturdier, than the old-time probots. And they ended in what looked like weapons pods. As Jason emerged into the hallway, they activated deflector shields, not a feature of the original probots, and flew straight at him. They raised weapon pods and began firing. One a blaster, the other small oval canisters that had to be explosives. Ben heard and felt the boom, distant and muffled, originating somewhere well beneath his feet, and was diverted enough to use the force to seek out Jason. Dimly he could feel his master, could sense movement and vitality from him. But the distraction was long enough for Ben to run clean into someone. He banged into rigid body armor, bounced off and hit the metal floor butt first. He looked up into the face of a Corsac officer glowering down at him.
"Back the way you came, son," the officer said. "This area is under lockdown."
"I've got to see my father," Ben said, swiftly improvising. "He's guarding the repulsor control room. I have to be sure he's all right."
"No, kid. It's off limits."
"I have to know he's all right!" Ben made the words a child's frightened wail. He darted around the Corsac officer, eluding the man's grab, and continued running down the corridor. He couldn't keep his shoulders from riding up, tensing. He reached out with the force, searching out the guard's response to his action. Ben felt no intimation of danger. The guard didn't aim his blaster. The man's emotions were a mix of irritation and sympathy. Ben felt the man weigh a decision, and it took the boy a few moments to figure out what it was, whether or not to communicate with his fellows, warn them that the boy was headed their way. Then Ben felt the man choose against that course of action. The guard turned away. Ben grinned to himself. That was easy. But then he sobered. If his mission was a success, that nice, sympathetic guard might die in the destruction of Centerpoint Station. But if Ben hadn't tricked the man, even more people might die. It was a small wrongdoing to prevent a bigger one. It was all in the interest of the greater good, the needs of the many. Ben had heard these words hundreds of times, mostly from Jason, and finally he began to have a sense of what they meant. Still, deep down, he remembered his father once saying, "There are times when the end justifies the means. But when you build an argument based on a whole series of such times, you may find that you've constructed an entire philosophy of evil." Troubled, Ben ran on. With his lightsaber, Jason batted away the blaster fire coming from the right-hand probot. He couldn't aim his deflections. That would require too much concentration. Instead, with his left hand, he reached out through the force and found the projectiles being fired by the left-hand probot. He seized them and redirected them in two streams, one stream toward each droid. They flew only as far as the droid's deflector shields, out about a meter from their bodies, and adhered there. Then, one after another, they detonated. Jason saw the deflector shields weaken with each explosion. He charged forward, relying on his speed and sudden motion to throw off the aim of the probot with the blaster. When the last of the projectiles had detonated, before the probot shields had time to strengthen, he lashed out, first right and then left. Two probots, sliced in half at the narrowest portions of their bulbous bodies, crashed to the metal floor. In the silence that followed, Jason heard Thrakken say, "Open fire." The rear rank of Corsac agents opened up with their blaster rifles. Each was set to full automatic fire, and they filled the air with blaster shots. Jason went into a fully evasive mode, running, leaping, dodging, spinning his lightsaber in a defensive shield that intercepted shot after shot. It wasn't enough. He felt a burn against his left calf as a blaster shot grazed it. Another shot, almost as close, tugged at his right sleeve and left a char-lined hole in it. He leapt up and back, cartwheeling, and as he cleared the zone of heaviest fire, before the security agents could adjust their aim, he reached against the ceiling with the force. He yanked against that simple, immobile metal surface for all he was worth. It came free, yielding to his pull. As he landed, a huge sheet of metal ceiling tore free from its housing almost directly overhead and crashed to the floor a mere 2 meters ahead of him. The far end of the same sheet remained adhered to the housing above, so what Jason faced was a crude ramp leading upward and acting as an angled shield between him and the blaster line. He looked up and frowned. His ramp led nowhere. Above the area where it had rested was heavier metal, a full bulkhead, but at least the metal sheet would give him a few moments' rest. Even now, though, it was shuddering under the blaster impacts, turning bright in one spot where some of the security agents were concentrating their fire. Jason peered out from around his impromptu shield, drawing fire, but gathering valuable information about his enemy's tactics. He saw three of the blaster wielders changing out power packs simultaneously, obviously part of a scheduled rotation. So they were carrying enough power packs to maintain constant fire for a long time, to keep him pinned down. Jason moved across to the other side of his shield and paused a moment before peeking out again. His enemy's strength was also their weakness, and he'd use it against them. His comlink bleeped three quick musical notes. The signal jolted Jason. It was Ben, and it meant target in sight. Jason nodded. He wouldn't just march forward in an effort to reach his objective. He'd continue drawing the station's defensive resources toward him, giving Ben some time. He closed his eyes and looked with other senses for sources of power, of heat. There they were, several of them, so close together that they seemed to form a single line of energy, the blasters of his enemies. Rugged weapons, doubtless kept in tip-top condition, they were doing a decent job of handling the tremendous heat demands of the constant fire. Well, he needed to change decent to poor. He reached out to those glowing energy sources, finding one at the end of the line. He poured his own power into it, pushed around to find weak spots, cracks, exits. He found one and exerted himself against it. It held against him for long moments. Then he heard a cry of alarm from one of the security agents, and the crack as the power pack of her blaster rifle exploded. Jason dared a look. The agent was down, injured, her body smoking, and two other Corsac agents, a shield-bearer before her and a rifleman next to her, were down too. Now there was a small gap at the right side of the blaster line. Before the Corsac agents became aware of him, Jason drew back and went searching for the next power pack in line. The second one was even hotter and weaker. It took less of an exertion to make it detonate. He looked again and saw four more Corsac agents down. The rest, slowing their rates of fire, were switching to single-shot firing mode. Behind the lines, Thracken turned and began trotting in the other direction, a comlink held to his lips. Jason grinned humorlessly. Another few moments, and this firing line would be a thing of the past. And he'd see what surprises his cousin had in store for him next. At a distance of 50 meters, Ben began to make out what guarded the door into the repulsor control chamber. Two Corsac agents, one male and one female, and a floating ball-shaped droid with four arms dangling from it. Even as Ben saw them, the floating droid drifted out from the doorway, its repulsor lift humming, into the middle of the corridor as if to bar his passage. Two of its arms, ending in bulbous pods with barrels, rose to aim at him. Ben raised his own arms and shouted, "Don't shoot! I'm only a kid!" Embarrassing words. He wanted to grow up so that he'd never be able to use an excuse like that again. But for now, it was useful. He heard the female guard say, "Hold your fire." And then she stepped out to beckon Ben forward. He moved toward her at a quick walk.
"I'm lost," he wailed.
"How did you get this deep into restricted areas?" she asked. Ben moved nearly 10 meters closer to her as she spoke.
"I was exploring in the tubes, and I got tired and hungry, and I fell asleep. And then there were explosions and alarms, and sounds of people running, and I finally found a real corridor, but I don't know where I am."
He made it most of the way to the guards in the course of that speech. Now only 5 meters separated them. He tried to summon tears, but they didn't come. He decided he needed more practice.
"Do you have a data pad?" the woman asked. "I can transmit you a map out of here."
"No,"
Ben said. Now he stood in front of her and the hovering droid. It looked pretty sturdy, and he could see nodules on the top surface that probably indicated deflector shield generators. But he didn't think its shields were up. Even without them, its bronze-colored metal hide suggested that it could withstand a blaster shot or two.
"You stay right here," the woman said. "I'll get a printout of the map."
Her companion, who hadn't budged from in front of the door, finally spoke.
"No," he said. "Protocol is we call it in, and they send someone to escort him out of the area."
"There's no one available to escort him," she said.
There was a slight edge of condescension to her voice.
Everyone's been pulled off for Target Alpha. So we can babysit here until they send someone, maybe hours from now, or we can send him off with a map.
Her partner sighed, exasperated, but didn't reply. Ben felt his pulse quicken. If the woman agent got her way, she'd be opening the door for him. One less task for him to undertake. Still, he'd have to take her out, and her partner, and the big floating ball, in order to get into the room. Prioritize your steps, Jason always told him. Priority one was the floating droid. It had to be some sort of combat model, so it was going to be tough, and maybe alert to attack, even from as unlikely a source as a red-headed urchin. Ben let his pouch gape open so he could look down at his lightsaber. If he reached for it, the droid might correctly interpret the motion as the herald of an attack. But he didn't have to reach. After the droid, he'd take out whichever of the human agents was more alert to him, then the one less alert. But he'd wait for the moment to decide which was which. Another of Jason's lessons was, plan and time your steps. The woman was stepping up to the doorway and preparing to insert her identicard into a security board slot. The man wasn't moving. It was a stare down. That gave Ben a moment to plan. He'd need to wait until the door was just opening. Then he'd take out the droid. His next priority would be getting into the chamber before the door closed again, and any security monitor might shut it as soon as it was open. So he'd rush through the door and deal with the human guards as he passed. After that, Jason would be disappointed in him if he didn't figure out some way off this station. But Ben didn't have time right now. The stare down between the guards ended. Irritably, the man stepped out of the way, and the woman inserted her identicard in the slot. Everything began to move in slow motion, as though the entire corridor were suddenly submerged in thick, invisible fluid. Ben saw the door begin to slide upward. Doors like this opened almost instantly, but his time perception was so dilated that he watched it as it rose a meter. He held his hand above his pouch and tugged through the force. His lightsaber leapt up into his hand, and he snapped it on, swinging it at the hovering droid, even as the distorted snap-hiss noise announced that the blade was coming live. Instead of slashing, he leapt upward and thrust down, aiming for one of the deflector shield nodules. The point of his lightsaber blade sheared through the bronze hull there, punching into the droid's insides. Ben kept his hands on the lightsaber handle, letting his weight drag the weapon down through the droid. The droid fell almost as fast as he did, with agonizing slowness, and Ben could see the male guard reacting to the attack, bringing his rifle barrel up. Ben's heels hit the ground, and he continued downward, going into a sideways roll toward the now fully open doorway. The male guard tried to track the boy with his blaster rifle. The woman, her face distorted in surprise, was punching the close button on the security panel. Her identicard was still in the panel's card slot. Ben came up on his feet between the man and the woman, so close that the man's blaster barrel now protruded safely past him and lashed out at the control panel. His lightsaber blade slashed into the controls and into the identicard, burning and fusing it into place. The blade came so close to the back of the woman's hand that he saw her skin blacken along a 4-centimeter patch. Her knuckles still hit the close button, even as the near edges of that button melted from the lightsaber's heat. Ben continued his forward roll, going head over heels into dimness, and as the door came slamming down behind him, into darkness, illuminated only by the glowing blue blade of his weapon. He couldn't make out much of the chamber's interior. There was a large mass in front of him, as if someone had parked a small ground speeder on its tail there. It didn't correspond to anything Dr. Saya had shown him in the simulations. There were little lights in various colors all over the walls. First things first, he spun and lunged back at the door, thrusting with his lightsaber at the top, where the lifter mechanism should be. He shoved the lightsaber blade in well above his head, cutting upward and sideways, trying to sever the mechanism, or, failing that, fuse it. This would give him time to accomplish his mission. His mission. That thought almost made him dizzy. It was his mission now. His cutting done, he slapped the light control on the door control panel. White overhead lights came on, and he spun, lightsaber ready, in case enemies waited there in the dark. No living enemies did. But the room was still not as it was supposed to be. The banks of lights, computers, and secondary control tables, some original equipment, and some installed by the Corellians, lined the walls, as they had in Dr. Saya's simulations. But where the main control table was supposed to be, rested something else entirely. It was a mound of machinery, as big as half a dozen huts engaged in a no-rules wrestling match. Roughly human-shaped, it had a desk-sized head that looked like a sensor node whose surface was thickly crusted with antennae, light monitors, and holocam lenses. Its torso was made up of mismatched modules, each at least as big as the head, connected with durasteel cables and light-bearing transparasteel fibers. Dangling torso units surrounded, perhaps incorporated, the control board Ben needed to access. The machine's arms appeared to be the heavy-duty cylindrical limbs from a wrecker droid, and ended in the same clumsy, destructive manipulator hands. Instead of legs, it had a thick bottom plate whose skirted edges probably concealed repulsor lift machinery. All these components were of different colors, some black, some silver, some industrial green. Fully upright, it would probably be 4 meters tall, but it sat hunched forward, like a lazy student kneeling with bad posture. Its head turned to bring 2 oversized holocam lenses to bear on him, and it spoke from somewhere in that head unit, its synthesized tones strikingly reminiscent of Jason Solo's voice.
"Who are you?"
"I'm Ben Skywalker," the boy said. He didn't add, "I'm here to destroy this whole installation."
"Wonderful," the droid said. "I'm so happy to meet you. I'm Anakin Solo."